Sean Rossiter. Welcome to the 15B, a weekly podcast about Utah's art community, produced by 15 Bytes. So we're here in the basement of the Leonardo talking with Jan Haworth, the creative director of the Leonardo. She's an American-born artist who came to prominence in England as part of the British pop movement. She was a pioneer in soft sculpture and is probably best known for her work on the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper album. And this week in Salt Lake City, her newest project, Work in Progress, opens up at the Street Level Gallery of UMOCA. And welcome to the podcast, Jan.
Hello.
You may hear a lot of noises, including the elevator coming up and down as we're talking here in the basement, so bear with us. And speaking of elevators, Jan, give me your elevator pitch. When someone says, "What is this exhibit?" what do you say?
Well, that's a great opportunity. Thank you for that. I've always wanted to do an elevator pitch.
Here's your chance.
Coming from Hollywood. Yeah. Okay, well, we decided to approach the topic of women in history, and we wanted to find a forum for doing that. And the idea really generated from the SLC Pepper or Sgt. Pepper cover, in that there's a crowd, and the crowd is very easily executed by people who are non-artists, because you can cut stencil graffiti much in the kind of Banksy tradition and ask people who have perhaps never done any art before to make a portrait, and you therefore can make a mural that is probably outsized by anybody's measurements of 28 feet long by 8 feet high in a reasonable amount of time. This project started really with a comic book strip, and I was going to do a background mural in the comic strip of a women's history mural, and realized I knew very, very little. And when I was trying to draw it, I was researching heads and thinking, you know, I needed to understand women's history better than I knew at the time. So the thought came into my head that it would be very interesting to do a women's history mural that perhaps raised some of the questions about who was who in the past, whose shoulders do we stand on, and that, you know, we don't know our history. That was further kind of underscored by the film War, Women's Art Revolution. And the first opening 5 minutes of that, someone in the street is asking different people with a microphone, name five women artists, and no one can. And we should be able to do better, I think. So that was the idea. We decided to call it Work in Progress so that it's something that goes on and on and on. It's not a finished piece ever. We're just researching the first kind of wave of people that we think should be cited for small and large sort of contributions to culture. So these are catalysts for change, basically, these women. So we need to know the history. We don't know our history. We can't name five women scientists. We can't name five women mathematicians or astrophysicists or and artists, for that matter. Sometimes we can name five actresses because they get a lot of coverage. But I think that that was the motivating force, that we simply don't know enough about the women that brought us to the 21st century.
So we have the work is, we have these panels that are 4 by 8 feet that you and Liberty Blake have been working on with a variety of people that have come in, cut stencils. There's now 100 heads that have been put across it. Tell me a little bit what it looks like visually.
Well, if you imagined women sitting on bleachers so that you would not see their bodies except in the front row, you just see their heads. So there's 100 heads sort of stacked. I guess you could imagine it rather like shingles. So if you do shingles, you have to start at the bottom and work up to the top. In this case, we start at the top and put the back row of women, and then put the next row on top of that, and the next row on top of that, and coming down then to the foreground where you have full figures. Each panel has about 15 to 17 heads on it, and then with the seven panels, we've covered the whole kind of spectrum of the 100, I think it's 106 heads, and 70 people cut those heads. So the job was then to bring all of those images together in a collage form, which Liberty Blake has done, and kept it really away from the Victorian scrapbook look. She sort of chopped and changed it, so it's like halfway between a scrapbook and Matisse, so it has a kind of loose edge look to it, although the portraits are very focused. So
this participatory aspect, where you bring in people in with or without training to work on it, was important, I assume.
Oh, very important. And I had the confidence to do that because of SLC Pepper, because that was over 30 artists working on that. And also the 337 project did that kind of thing, which is another project that was here in Salt Lake, where you just throw open the doors. And as an editor or a director or a conductor or whatever you are, you become the crossroads, but you don't over direct it. You say yes, whatever paper you want to use, whatever, you know, paint you want to use, how you see this, yes, you can cut that, no, don't cut that, you know. So it keeps it very open and flexible. It's dangerous because it could go terribly wrong, but it didn't, you know. And so at the end of it, you're both exhausted and relieved and, you know, kind of happy that it
came
turned together
out okay.
yeah.
And it was the participants weren't just about the raw cutting and pasting. You were allowing them also to make decisions. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the thing is that art is always has limitations. In other words, we did need to have it on paper, not on cardboard. We set up another parameter saying no one from Utah. But if you feel strongly about some woman in history that we don't have a photograph of today, let me know the name, I'll make the photograph, you do the stencil. So in other words, there was certainly an opening on choice of who went on the mural. That wasn't my choice. It was, you know, a collaboration on that level. You know, the way that it's cut, what choices are made within it, whether somebody does a really, you know, infinitely careful cut of lace around the neck of a person or ignores that, or just cuts a very simple stencil. It really runs the range of that within the portraits that were created. So each of the portraits really has a personality. It's not that it's all same-ish. Had Liberty and I done it, you know, just us doing the portraits, it would have been very homogeneous, and the mural isn't like that at all. And that reflects, I think, the individual qualities really of the person doing the stencil, but then likewise that pays back into this is an individual.
Were there any of the choices of the people in the mural? I don't want you to have to pick favorites out of a hundred heads, but do you have some favorites out of 100 heads, or the ones that were the most surprising that you hadn't thought might, you didn't know about?
No, totally. I mean, you know, this has been an enormous education for me personally, because everything has gone through me. So, and I know I've learned about so many different women, and I'm only just starting to learn about some of them. I mean, with 100 heads and, you know, running the workshops and so forth, I haven't dug deep into Lottie Lenya's life, you know.
Lottie Lenya?
Well, she was a partner to Bertolt Brecht, and there's some suggestion that some of the poetry that he's credited with actually is hers. Yeah, so you know, each of these women, there are stories to be told. There's, you know, obviously there's going to be the side of being overlooked, etc. But then we too are overlooking them. I you know, was looking at Eleanor Roosevelt on the mural, and decided to watch some documentaries, because I've done a lot of background work on this, looking at different periods of time and what the condition of women were in England or Russia or wherever, and thinking about Eleanor Roosevelt and how she was such a magnificent creature in her day and so well known, and I remember my mother quoting her, and yet we barely reference her today. So there's so many questions that the mural has both celebrated and asked. It's asked about beauty, because the women concerned would choose a photograph. Would they choose the young woman, or would they choose an older woman? Well, often it was the older woman because it was more of an interesting stencil to cut. And there was more evidence there of who she was somehow, the way she had glasses on or a hat or beads or something. I mean, in Mother Jones's case, we could have taken the young Mother Jones, but we didn't. We took the older one because there was so much character there and so much interest. It's also brought up the idea of fame and that it goes away. Whatever, however famous you are, you're gone, really. So reflect on that, because that shouldn't be what you're after. And it, I think, also has brought young women today in Salt Lake City face to face with information that they had no idea of, how many women had to fight so hard simply to get the vote. I mean, we can talk about proto-feminism till we're black in the face, but it's much easier to be a guerrilla girl than it was to be Pankhurst. You know, it's fun and it's funny and it's full of panache, but it was hard for those women to get the vote. And, you know, it's scandalous that it took so long. And I think, you know, finding out that is amazing. I mean, finding out that women are 49% of the workforce, yet in the world we have 1% of the wealth. So there are things like that that, I mean, we can beat the drum now, but we have to say that it's so much easier for us than it was for these women who, you know, are in our past, that are the gift to us. I mean, the Brontes, or, you know, different authors, they would put their work in under a male name because then they might get published. Well, that doesn't happen so much now. Maybe not as many women are published unless you go through Virago. But it's, you know, it's interesting that we should count our blessings, but not put down the torch. You
know? And these are the shoulders we're standing on.
Yeah.
And that's what we get, is the head and shoulders.
Yeah, we do. A nice metaphor. Yeah.
So I noticed, what I thought is, there's a Cleopatra and there is Queen Elizabeth. There's a few of these figures that we know visually, that we can recognize visually. Mm-hmm. But in this project, you have the problem that for visuals, we really only have maybe a few historical portraits, and the rest of these women have to be from the photographic era,
yeah,
in which, or we don't recognize who
yeah,
they
no,
are.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head there, because, of course, that means it truncates the appreciation or the story. But then, too, there's very little record of,
It may not be so truncated, because there's not that many women we know of prior
right,
to the past century.
Right, and so when we talk about Hildegard, do I go to the representation of her, which is just done by a monk somewhere,
sure,
you know, and just put that there? And I think that will come a little bit more to the fore as we go forward. In other words, yes, we will take the drawing of somebody, because it's as close as we're going to get. And anyway, it's rather beautiful to have that medieval look to this particular person, which was their period. So it could go slightly more art historical. So I don't know how to pronounce this correctly, but Hypatia, who was a Greek scholar, she's on the vase, but who knows if that looks anything like her. But I would love her to be cited, vase or whatever, you know. So I think you're right, and that was one of the original questions, that, hey, it's not going to go much before the 1700s, when you had more accurate engravings of people and so forth coming forward. But then there are so many lost histories, I mean, male and female, and we're more aware of them, you know, to a certain degree. I mean, our great-grandmother's history is lost, and that's terrible. I mean, I would love to know all the stories that surround somebody close to me that is, you know, was part of my making. And really, those stories need to be told, and endlessly we can't, because nobody's really going to read about my great-grandmother.
Well, this is, you know, you did mention no one from Utah. This was a bit of a safety net for you, so that you didn't have 100 women saying they wanted their grandmother, who was really important to be.
Well, having said that, I think I would love nothing more than a grandmother panel, you know, of women who are no longer here, but really influenced a whole generation of young people. No,
but we're talking famous heads here. I mean, this is the
yes and no. I mean, Florence Chadwick isn't really famous anymore, but she swam the English Channel, and that was a role model at the time. You know, so it's in a way a small event when you compare it with, you know, someone who invented a process by which you can test for diabetes that saved thousands and millions of lives. You know, so how do you adjust that? Well, you don't. You let it ride because it means something. So I think there's a spectrum, certainly, and the grandmothers should be there. The protective quality of saying no Utah was because I did the same thing on SLC Pepper because I thought it would be an argument, basically. And I would put Geraldine Dreyfuss there, and I would put Diane Stewart there, and then somebody would come along and say, well, you don't have Jennifer Jordan, and she's a filmmaker, and she's really important. So, you know, it would lead to probably an excellent dialogue, but it would mean there would be exclusion, and that's something I feel very sensitive about. And I did learn the lesson through City Weekly doing a ripoff of Sgt. Pepper, that they received such a mail bag of complaints about people who weren't there that I think they did it with great humor, but it you know, that's a tough call to do that. No, it's not. And I, you know, though I do believe there should be the grandmas, and what better state than Utah to have the grandmas? I'm very tempted by the idea of cowgirls. So maybe we should do a strip up the middle of the West and do Annie Oakley and, you know, all those.
So when you bring up the point that Eleanor Roosevelt was, in her time, probably one of the most famous women in the world at the time, and now we may barely remember her. My daughter did a seventh grade report on Eleanor Roosevelt.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
but I learned a lot from that.
Yeah.
But what about the flip side? So I noticed that you have Michelle Obama and you have Ellen DeGeneres. And is there a thing where 10, 15 years from now, it's dated just because they may not be as famous then as they are now?
Yeah, and I think that's okay, because we do go back through the Victorian albums and we see things there that we, you know, no longer have any connection to. And I think that had we not had those few heads, you know, Jodie Foster and, you know, that kind of thing, it would have been an editorial that was perhaps too prescriptive. So Charlize Theron is on the SLC Pepper mural because of the bravery of doing the film Monster. She is a celebrity. We are trying to avoid celebrity as such, in the sense of those women have had a lot of attention. I mean, someone said, you're not doing Marilyn. I said, well, yeah, you know, she has enough attention. I'd rather that space that Marilyn would be in is
how many other women that we don't know about could we
do that right at this point? That's right. And yet still we should say something about Ellen DeGeneres. You know, so there are other reasons for that to, you know, be accounted for.
Is it more should I say an accomplishment rather than fame for the sake of fame?
Yeah, I think so. And perhaps it is that lonely thing of being one person standing alone, maybe coming up for criticism. So when Jodie Foster did her speech at the Academy Awards saying more roles for women, it was a brave thing to do. It wasn't a populist thing to do. And yes, there's a certain amount of panache. I'm going to say something that's going to upset people, and boy, I can do it. I get that. But I think standing alone is what really appeals to me. It's very frightening. And so somebody who's 4'10", called Mother Jones, as I referenced before, her whole family died of smallpox. Her house burnt to the ground. She rose out of literally ashes to be the miner's angel. And she stomped up and down on those podiums, you know, telling them that they needed to strike for better rights. And it was heroically brave, this little Irish woman, you know, doing these amazing things. So, you know, I think it's that willingness to stand alone, like Sojourner Truth or Rosa Parks, or even if the Rosa Parks is set up and it really was Claudette Colvin, it's important, that lonely place, you know, and sometimes we're called upon to do that.
So this opens this Friday, October 7th at UMOCA. It's there for a couple months. It comes back to the Leonardo, at which point you're adding to it. Mm-hmm. So are these the second string?
No, not at all. We have a list of about 200, and we only have 106 on the mural. So, and the list, just anytime you talk to anybody, there's 10 more people. In the interim time while it's up, I'll be growing that list, and it's sort of like a directory. We're going to have a chair in front of the mural for people to sit on, which is also collage, and it will have a ledger in it, which will take account of some of the first women that are in the mural. But it's very much about, we need to talk about more musicians. We need to talk about more people from China. We have to look at Africa more clearly.
That's interesting. Did you find yourself creating a Western-centric?
Oh, I'm sure
and
it is.
It could be that
I'm sure it is.
More of the accomplishments have been Western-centric just because of the history of the world, but also we don't know about.
Well, A, we don't know about it. B, it's Western-centric because education happened to fall into the laps or happened to be gained by Western women earlier. So Western women have I won't say led, they've been very lucky to kind of get to the front because of women fighting to get their degrees in medicine and so forth. So yes, there is a post-colonial, whatever you want to call it, bias, I'm sure, underpinning this. And certainly we've done everything we can to level the playing field, and at least in the preface piece of seven panels, pay homage to people from different parts of the world. That's why we put Laura Decker in the middle, the young woman who circumnavigated the globe alone in her ship, her boat, her sailing boat, whatever you call it, technically, called Guppy, because it hopes to embrace, certainly a much more, fair and dynamic worldview. And I don't know how we proceed from now. I know we'll be adding panels. I'd like to go up to 100 feet. By the time it leaves BYU, it'll be 44 feet long. And a lot of places won't be able to accommodate that. I don't know how that's going to work. I mean, BYU will be showing it, and they barely can accommodate the next two panels that we're going to be adding. So it's going to be, the story of it is obviously something that Liberty and I have to, really put our heads together and say, okay, this place really just wants to do musicians. Okay, we're in LA. They want to do superheroes that are fictional. What are we going to do about that? Can we do that? Okay, this is how we do it.
So is there, as you, someone goes to experience this exhibit, will they have a cheat sheet that is, they see these list of heads. I took, taking a quick glance, I know this one, I know this one, who is this?
Yeah.
Is an educational tool? Are you going to have biographies of them? How are you dealing with that aspect of who are these people?
This is where I come to conflict in myself, because I think that has to be there. It isn't there on SLC Pepper. You have to go to the website to find out who's who. And it's an argument I had with my late husband all the time about putting numbers on things and then the name so that you can find it. So we'll create a key. We will do that. We'll create a key just like they created a key for Sergeant Pepper. And so you can go online and find out who all the heads are. Ooh, there's Bobby Bream. Ooh, there's Marilyn Monroe. There's Shirley Temple again and again. So when I was in England, I knew all the names of the wildflowers, and I knew them in all seasons, from just the first bud to the end of the season, the seed. And when I came to Utah, I deliberately decided not to learn the names of the flowers, because I really wanted to regard them as a mystery and to really look at them and to try to really understand them and know that they came at a certain time here, and what were they, So I feel a little bit like that with some visual art, that as soon as you put the word to it, you dismiss it. So very often when you go around a gallery, you'll see people reading the labels, not really embedding themselves in the artwork. So I have a conflict about that. I would like to be able to say, okay, here's the list, and you want to identify all the people. Sure you do. Of course you do. I do.
Yeah,
I want to learn that.
That was your whole, your origin story was about the fact
that
you couldn't name 10.
And yet I do want you to be surrounded by it. It's like a triptych. There are five panels and then two coming out like wings. So I hope that that moment of being underwater with it happens. And then they go to the ledger to say, where is it? And I'm not putting numbers. I was going to put initials on all the heads, and I just couldn't bring myself to put lettering of any sort on the mural or a number or any of that. So the ledger will have a little tiny photograph of the head. So it won't be all that easy. You're going to have to go all the way down the ledger to find the one you're looking at. But then we probably will publish a key as well, so you do have your cheat sheet, as you say. But I like to represent it as a slight conflict between the visual world and the verbal world. And I think we should ask ourselves that question of being in the moment, or being behind our camera, or taking a selfie instead of being in the moment. And we're all doing that now. And we all know that we're kind of cheating the moment somehow, that we may not go back to those photographs that are being sent out and the rest of it. What were we like before that happened? I mean, what were we like when we were going in a canoe, you know, to Oregon? I mean, it must have been so different. And of course we want to share those moments, but then maybe we don't really look at them all that much. We grab it kind of thinking we've got it, but it's not going through our brain. It's like the difference between drawing a landscape, which takes a long time, and taking a photograph of it. Drawing it, you know it.
You
it becomes
part,
it well it becomes part of your muscle, you know. And that's a very different experience. So something in there. Those are very much kind of one's art domain of, you know, some questions you ask yourself when you make a piece of art and you know that you take 3 months to make it and somebody spends 30 seconds maximum, if at all, looking at it, and you think, well, I could get away with making a mess in that corner, no one's going to notice it, you know, but you don't. So I think we need to slow down.
Thank you, Jan. We've been talking with Jan Haworth, who's work in progress, is about to go up at UMOCA this weekend. It opens on October 7th. It'll be there till January 14th, and there'll be an artist reception during gallery stroll October 21st. The work will then come back to the Leonardo for a couple months before it travels to BYU, and then points yet to be determined.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the 15B, a podcast about Utah's art community, produced by 15 Bytes. Music by Color Animal, with support from the Doctorow Foundation, Salt Lake City Arts Council, and the Salt Lake County Zoo Arts and Parks.